information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
On this Wednesday, May 24th, nice to have you back for Up North News Radio. First off, let's take care of some business from our last hour and say congratulations to Tony. She's from Waukesha, and she had the answer to Aaron's trivia question. Aaron, nice work out of you. Why don't you remind people of the question and the answer?
So, yes, this musician from Waukesha, Les Paul, is the inventor of the solid body guitar and there the only go. Person who was ever inducted into both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the National Inventors Hall of Fame.
Very nice. You see, I turned on the lava lamp just for that.
I see that. Just yep, there we
the,
go.
For the party here, the new addition to the Kreitlow home office right next to the gumball machine, which is filled with M&Ms, which I've done a very good job of staying away from the M&Ms.
You know,
only because there's a big bag of Kit Kat minis.
Okay, there we go.
In the kitchen instead, because the kitchen is right there about three steps away. It's the old Leonard Skinner song, give me three steps, and there'll be a Kit Kat bar to go with my cup of coffee over there. All right, I should tell folks what's actually going on this hour and stop talking about my chocolate cravings. We're going to compare Gophers and Badgers a little later this hour. Because of the things that are getting done or are not getting done, truly a tale of two states, a tale of two legislatures, and we'll look at the differences in what's happening in St. Paul versus Madison. We yesterday compared how much further Wisconsin could slide by comparing what recently happened in North Carolina. So we're going to look at the other side of the coin here and how much better things could be if we were to have fair maps that allowed the will of the people in Wisconsin to be better represented. If you'd like to ask any questions or make any comments while we talk about that or anything else this hour, the phone number is 844-967-2789. Now, the Up North News Daily newsletter dropped, as it always does, right around 5 a.m. in your email box. And if you look at what Christina Laurie gave us today in the newsletter, it includes, if you had any desire whatsoever to put together a road trip list around the Chippewa Valley for things to do this summer, could you use about 100 suggestions? Because in the newsletter is the link to a website that put together a list of 100 things to do in the Eau Claire area this summer. And again, the Chippewa Valley area, because we're also talking Rock Fest and Country Jam and certainly things to do on the Chippewa River and the small breweries that are in the area. And it's one of the reasons that Eau Claire has been named, you know, one of the coolest small cities in the U.S. So you can learn all about that. On a more serious note, Sherita Booker has put together an article on maternity care deserts. They are on the rise across Wisconsin. And I can tell you just here in the northwestern part of the state, the places that don't do deliveries anymore, the labor and delivery units that are either sharply curtailed, closing, or closed, is getting us to the point where we're nearly at the point where in Rice Lake, where the Marshfield Clinic and Hospital are located, there may be shortly no other place to deliver a baby between Eau Claire and Duluth Superior. That if you can't make it to Eau Claire or Duluth Superior, and if you can't make it to Rice Lake, you're going to have more instances of babies delivered along the side of the road. And I, over the weekend, talked to a recently retired head of a police or fire department who explained that, yes, in fact, the number of roadside deliveries is on the rise because people have to drive farther and farther. And if they go into early labor, you know, so far those make for interesting stories. Oh, baby born on the side of the road and, you know, mom and baby are fine. One of these days, the story is going to be that mom and or baby are not fine because of these maternity care deserts. And so look for that article, a link to it in the daily newsletter from Up North News. To get there, you go to upnorthnewswi.com, click on newsletter in the top banner, get yourself subscribed to that as well. Also, Kia Vakil, who we talked to on Friday mornings, has a new article at the Up North News website about how Republicans plan for student loan debt would uniquely hurt public sector workers. I mean, they're already going after the President Biden's student loan debt forgiveness plan overall. But in Wisconsin, nearly 5,000 public service workers who had their student loan debt canceled could see their loans reinstated. And more than 36,000 could lose credit toward debt relief. And so Kia sums that story up for us again over at the website, and that's upnorthnewswi.com. When we come back, we'll talk a bit about what's happening in Minnesota and other states. We'll talk about South Carolina becoming the latest to pass a punishing ban on abortions and treating women like second-class citizens when it comes to their health care. We'll also touch a bit on what's happening in the state of Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis apparently is going to launch his presidential bid tonight. Look, we're very pro-radio here. We're very much an audio medium. So if he'd launch something on the radio, that would be one thing, but Twitter Spaces? So we'll get into that more yet this hour. This is Up North News Radio. It's a Wednesday morning, and we'll be back in just a bit. You're up north. Bob Dylan's 82nd birthday today.
Early one morning the sun was shining, I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red.
All right, a tale of Wisconsin versus other states coming up in just a moment. Jennifer Wichitsky is here from Weatherology, has a look at our forecast with a bit of a temporary cool down, but we continue to keep things rather dry, mild, going to get downright warm again, I believe. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. We certainly could use the rain. It doesn't look like we'll really be seeing any of that coming in for the next several days even. It does look like we saw that cold front push through the whole state here for today. So overall, looking at a cooler temperatures for everyone compared to yesterday, kind of all over the board, though, with low 70s around Richland Center today, upper 60s along a line from Amory, southeast towards Madison, mid-60s in the central parts of the state, and lower 60s around Waukesha, and in the 50s along the Michigan lakefront. So like I said, just kind of all over the place today. Partial sunshine developing for most today. More sunshine expected from Madison to Richland Center and in the southwestern parts of the state. Sunny or becoming mostly sunny for everyone for Thursday. Temperatures not moving a whole lot. 60s across the board, still 50s around Milwaukee. Sunshine to round out the work week on Friday with highs starting to warm up a little as the warm front begins to push through. Mid to low 70s for most, essentially at or slightly above average for this time of the year. For 60 is a little bit closer to like Waukesha and Milwaukee. And then for the Memorial Day weekend coming up, it still looks like a dry forecast for both Saturday and Sunday, with sunshine continuing and temperatures slowly warming up. 70s on Saturday and for most on Sunday as well, though a few areas might get into the low 80s on Sunday. Looks like Wisconsin Rapids down to Madison and to Richland Center.
Now, best case scenario here is that we have this really pleasant, warm Memorial Day weekend. And then like from Tuesday onward, we get, you know, rain pushing in, because then all the planting gets done and then we get some rain in time. So having laid out the best case scenario, Jennifer, I guess we'll keep our fingers crossed and just be thankful for a pleasant holiday weekend. Thanks so much for the update. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day. Jennifer Wichitsky from Weatherology joining us every morning with details on our statewide weather forecast. In sports, the bats came to life once again for the Milwaukee Brewers with home runs from Joey Weimer and Owen Miller. And the Brewers won last night 6-0. Colin Ray went 5 1/3 innings for the Brewers, giving up 4 hits, striking out 4 batters, most importantly, giving up no runs. and then four relievers combined to protect what was the fifth Brewers shutout of the season. Weimer hit a 430-foot blast into left field in the third inning. It was the Brewers' second longest homer of the season. Brian Anderson hit a two-run double in the eighth inning. Adrian Hauser will get the start this afternoon as the Brewers and Astros wrap up their series. In the Fox Valley, you can hear that game on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. And around Richland Center, you can catch the game on News from the Center 107.7 and 1450 AM. And then the San Francisco Giants come to American Family Field for games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The legislative session in Minnesota has come to an end because it is one of those predetermined calendars, as happens in a lot of states. Wisconsin is a bit of an anomaly now in that it has kept the full-time status of its legislature, which is not quite a rarity among the states, but it is getting to be a smaller number. And you can have an honest debate one way or the other on whether the legislature should be considered full-time and whether legislators should get a salary that is commensurate with a full-time job. However you come down on that debate, the fact of the matter is that's what we have right now. Wisconsin is a full-time legislature. It is a $50,000 plus salary plus per diems. And so a lawmaker can make a comfortable living and be in session pretty much year-round as circumstances warrant. And again, that might be perfectly fine. I didn't mind that being the case at all when I was there, you know, some 15 years ago. But as we've seen in the past few years, since Republicans took over the legislature, the last thing that they are doing is treating it as a full-time job. They are quite literally getting paid full-time to do less than part-time work, to stay home for 9 months at a time by their own decision and get paid for it. In 2020, they stayed home for 9 months in the midst of a pandemic and a recession when the state needed them desperately to take actions that would have both saved lives and helped the state economy, and they sat on their hands. And in 2022, they stayed home for 9 months, got paid for the whole thing, but did nothing that would have addressed what was then thought to be about a $1, maybe $2 billion surplus that, again, could have been put to work for Wisconsin families and entrepreneurs and farms. They did nothing with it, hoping that Tim Michels would win the governor's race, and then they would turn that surplus into tax cuts predominantly toward the very wealthy. Well, Tim Michels didn't win. The Republicans are still sitting on that surplus. And again, very little work is getting done. They're working on a state budget because they have to. You have to do that every 2 years. But as soon as that budget is done, probably sometime next month, they will be back in Madison very infrequently, to put it mildly. And they will have very little to show for it. Once they pass the budget, they will, as often happens, try to do the least amount of work possible. And in fact, are doing all they can to prevent any work from getting done by Governor Evers and Democratic lawmakers. Governor Evers proposed more than 500 things in his budget proposal that the state could have adopted that would have been good for working families, good for the economy, good for small business development, good for infrastructure. Those things were all taken out. Now, Republicans may put some of those back in to some degree, but without nearly the resources or the imagination that are required by Wisconsin families and small businesses and farmers and the environment. It's at the point now where yesterday, at one point in the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, where much of the Republican version of the budget is written, Republicans actually turned off the microphone for one of the Democratic members when he was making the case that there should be paid family leave in Wisconsin. And yes, Republicans took that out of Governor Evers' budget proposal, a pilot program that would have established paid family leave. which would have been good for small businesses, would have been good for workers. But what happened yesterday was a Democratic lawmaker said, okay, you've taken it out. I'd like to propose we at least put some money back in the budget to study the economic impact of a paid family leave program. The Republican member said, hey, we already told you once we take things out of the budget, you're not allowed to even talk about them anymore. And Senator Evan Goyke said, I'm not talking about putting it back in. I'm talking about something totally different. Let's at least study whether there'd be a positive economic impact to paid family leave. And Republicans responded by shutting off his microphone. That's where we've come to in the Wisconsin legislature with the Republicans who have been drunk with power for 12 years now. After rigging the maps twice to lock in a gerrymander, meaning they have dominant control over the legislature, even though they quite often get a minority of votes statewide. But having locked that in, they're now at the point where, much like in some other states where they have, in Tennessee, they tried to kick members out. In Montana, they kicked a member out of the chamber. They're doing all they can to silence dissent, to silence having to answer any questions even about what it is that they're doing. They're doing what they can to eliminate transparency and accountability for what they're doing. Now compare this to what is wrapping up over in Minnesota, where, as I mentioned, the legislative session is more of a fixed thing that is coming to an end. They have to, you know, beat the clock on, you know, what all they're trying to get done. And the legislature is run by Democrats in both the state Senate and the state House of Representatives, and they have Democratic Governor Tim Walz in office as well. And Governor Walz called what just happened the most successful legislative session, certainly in our lifetimes, maybe in Minnesota history. It was a legislative session that was called transformational, generational, historic, and all because even with thin majorities, Democrats held together and did more than any other previous legislature in such a host of areas. Women's health care rights, about the privacy of their bodies and their ability to have the right to consult with their doctor and make choices on abortion, for example. There was gun safety, something where in other states, things have gone backwards. This is the one-year anniversary of the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. 19 children gunned down, along with two adults. What has happened in Texas since then? They've gone backwards and allowed for permitless carry, quite literally the Wild West going on in Texas, and more mass shootings over the past year in Texas as a result. Back to Minnesota, though, because of a surplus, by the way, a $17 billion surplus compared to about $7 billion here in Wisconsin. Again, in both cases, because of Democratic governors that were shepherding the economy. But not only did the Democrats in Minnesota codify abortion rights, but they passed paid family and medical leave and sick leave and protection for transgender rights and driver's licenses for undocumented residents. Something we talked about yesterday, about the importance of that from both a safety standpoint on our roads and, frankly, something that's good for humanity when people who are working on our dairy farms have to go to doctor appointments or have to take their kids to school. There was there were wider voting access at a time when Wisconsin Republicans are trying to limit voting access. There was a tax credit aimed at low-income parents with kids. There was a $1 billion investment made in affordable housing, including rental assistance. Again, affordable housing is a topic that's been talked about a lot in Wisconsin, that we need that as one way to address the labor shortage. In Minnesota, they went and did it. The gun safety rules include background checks for private gun transfers, in other words, closing that gun show loophole. They have now a red flag warning system. A red flag system in Wisconsin quite likely would have prevented the gunning down of two law enforcement officers in Barron County a couple of weeks back. The Democratic legislature there banned conversion therapy for LGBTQ people. They legalized recreational marijuana, expanded public education funding at a time when Wisconsin Republicans are trying so hard to squeeze public schools out of existence. They called for work toward a carbon-free electric grid by the year 2040. And there was a $2.5 billion construction package, capital projects, big projects around the state, and $300 million more of money to nursing homes to deal with COVID and a baby boom. So we've seen that how in the Carolinas and Texas and Florida and elsewhere, things could be worse. But if we look just to the west, we certainly see how things could be better. We'll be back with more after this break. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Seems like Bob Dylan has a song for everything, including what's happening with politics and the debt ceiling negotiations, as the national media continue to put it. I'd like to know your thoughts on how you think this needs to be resolved. We have not talked about the minting of a $1 trillion coin. It's an option that people say, that look, the government can, print whatever money it wants. So, mint a $1 trillion coin and be done with it and say, see, we found an extra $1 trillion. My own view is the 14th Amendment applies here, that you cannot undermine the full faith and credit of the United States when it comes to being, honorable with its debt obligations. But maybe there are ways that things should be cut in terms of spending, not just for social programs, but maybe for the massive tax cuts from a few years back, or maybe defense. So what are your own thoughts on how this all should get resolved properly and in the best way possible with divided government? 844-967-2789. Before we come back to matters about the debt ceiling, I want to check in with Robert from West Allis, who has some thoughts on the comparisons between Wisconsin and Minnesota. Robert, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for reading that list. We get so used to failures, frankly, of the Republicans and Scott Walker in Wisconsin, whether it's, passing in high-speed rail, not doing medical expansion, which has resulted in a two-year lower life expectancy people in Minnesota, or even showing up for work. They've set the bar so low, it's kind of amazing to hear a little about what would be possible if we had a legislature that actually and everyday people what could be achieved. So that was really amazing to hear that list of achievements of Minnesota. So if they can do it, I'm not sure why we can't. So thank you for that.
Hey, you're very welcome, Robert. Thank you for calling. And of course, the answer there is simple, and it comes back to the gerrymander of 2011, and then conservatives being able to frighten voters enough to win enough state Supreme Court seats to put right-wing politicians onto the court and hold up the rigging of the maps. And unfortunately, the voices of the voters, by and large across Wisconsin are being ignored. Mark from Prairie du Sac is here and says here, Mark, you want to talk first about Highway 61 before we get into the debt ceiling. Good morning, Mark.
Yeah. If I remember right, Proctor is on Highway 61 or just off of it. And that, dated a girl from Proctor when I was in college. So that's okay. Fond memories of that highway. But I mean, Brian should just say the debt ceiling is, like you said, the 14th Amendment is what is the law of the land here. And we're going to pay, the United States is going to pay its debts. I don't know if we need to mint a coin, Biden should just say we are going to pay our debts, whether the Republicans like it or not, and just go ahead and say this debt crisis is over and the United States is going to honor its obligations, period. They might not like it, but TS, I mean, that it is just that's what the Constitution says, and if they choose to ignore it, and if the Supreme Court chooses to ignore it, be like Abraham Lincoln and Andrew Jackson on the Indian Removal Act that the Supreme Court back in the day declared unconstitutional back in the earlier, prior to the Civil War, just say, Supreme Court's got no idea. They can't enforce the laws. So Biden should just say, this is what the law is. The Constitution says the debt shall be honored, and the United States should just honor its debts, period. And that would restore world confidence in the U.S. economy. I mean, that it was just the Republicans are trying to undermine our economy, as other white heads than I have said.
Yeah, I agree very much, Mark. Thank you for making that point this morning. Is that, you know, there's been this talk, again, it's all speculative at this point, that if the president were to say the 14th Amendment applies and our debts are not to be questioned, the speculation is that markets would react poorly to that, to say, oh my goodness, you know, it just means that there's going to be more debt. And I do take the opposite view. I think that it will, in fact, bolster confidence in those who around the world who purchase bonds through the United States, in that, yes, we have debt, but we have debt in a way that improves our quality of life and economy, and we will continue to make progress, you know, on growing the economy in such a way that we can work our way back from that debt. But it's that same debt that allowed us to, you know, fund the Second World War and save the world and build the middle class and everything else that comes along with it. So is there room to reduce spending in parts of our budget? Yes, we talked about that in the last hour. But it would be even more damaging to have a default and have those bonds have diminished standing in global markets. Because again, we talked about this with President Biden's, you know, curtailed trip to Asia. Don't think for a moment that United States debt, United States bonds, are always going to be the number one choice in the world. It's not that hard to imagine a scenario where the United States defaults, our bonds are seen as less safe and stable, and a country like China says, well, we're going to come in and provide a different market alternative. And while we may, you know, poo-poo that and say, oh no, nobody will ever trust China more than us, there's no guarantee of that. Just like there was no guarantee that, you know, Roe v. Wade was never going to be overturned. There is no telling what a certain political group in this country is willing to do to this country to protect a very small minority. Let's go to Dick in Madison, who wants to talk about the debt ceiling as well. Dick, good morning.
Good morning. Over the weekend, something that I saw on Sunday that just made my blood boil is a Democratic member of the House from out east, I forget her name, and she kept referring to these Republicans who, behind closed doors, say, oh, yeah, this is absolutely what should happen. We should be voting for it. And she kept referring to them as moderate and reasonable. Well, I have another way of describing them, and I mentioned it earlier this week. I would call them cowardice and unpatriotic. I mean, if you're willing to say that behind closed doors, you know what the right thing to do is, then just do it.
I agree, Dick, and I was watching some coverage early this morning about that as well, that one of the new talking points, I guess, if you will, is you now have some progressive members like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, and others making noise that there may be things that are red lines for them, and that some people are saying, well, let's use that to our advantage. Let's design a quote-unquote bipartisan package so that Kevin McCarthy can lose a few votes to his extreme right, and that you lose a few votes on the Democratic side, and that the common sense moderates in the middle will get it done. Now, I'm going to admit, Dick, that for years and years, I probably subscribe to similar thinking, but what I've seen in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years or so, I no longer have that kind of faith that a so-called, you know, moderate package is A, actually reachable given, you know, how extreme the you know, the Republicans have become, and B, that it wouldn't be very damaging in terms of what it would be willing to cut versus what it wouldn't be willing to cut. And so, Dick, it sounds like you're pretty much saying the same thing, that you'd have very little faith that so-called moderates could A, reach a deal across the aisle, and B, that it would be a half-decent package in the end.
That's correct, because I see them as just being total. They're not, obviously, like I said, they're not profiles in courage. They will not stand up for what they really believe or say they believe. So I don't see it getting done that way. I think 14th Amendment is the only way it's going to happen.
I agree. Dick, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Hope you have a good day. And I'm going to make sure I add this caveat to everything that I just put out there. I am very happy to be wrong about this. I will always leave a little bit of room somewhere deep inside me to be surprised, to say that there are still enough people who might qualify as moderates on the Republican side of things, as well as on the Democratic side of things, to put something together. It has happened before on things like curtailing the abuse of the filibuster for certain judicial nominations, for example. So I'm not going to say it can't happen. I'm just saying that I've become a bit more suspicious as to whether it can be done. Not that there isn't will, not that there aren't members on the left and right, because again, I will say that, you know, as a member of the legislature, but again, this was over a decade ago now, but that I could have conversations with Republican lawmakers and we would talk about ways that we could get something done if only our leadership on both sides would let us. And of course, that was a tough enough hill to climb. You really, really had to stand up to your leadership and not back down in the face of, you know, getting yelled at right to your face. And it could happen. It does happen. I just don't know that it's going to happen right now in this thing, because the demands on the Republican side are so strong. And the only way it comes to fruition means that Kevin McCarthy will no longer be speaker. It means that there are enough so-called moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats that put something together that Kevin McCarthy would actually let it come up for a vote, that it would pass without some progressives and without some far-right Republicans. But then once it passes, the very next thing that's going to happen is the Republican caucus is going to vote and probably have the votes to toss Kevin McCarthy out. Now, Kevin McCarthy maybe thinks, well, I'll keep my speaker's job if I get some Democratic votes. I don't know that he should necessarily count on that happening, because I don't know that Kevin McCarthy has built up a level of trust as such that Republican members would say, okay, we will rescue him and keep him in the speaker's chair because we were able to get this debt ceiling deal done. Because this isn't the kind of thing you reward Kevin McCarthy for. The debt ceiling shouldn't be held hostage in the first place. Now, unfortunately, we're still having this because national media continues to frame it as a standoff, as a negotiation, rather than what it is, a willingness to tank the economy. The latest lead from the Associated Press goes like this. Debt ceiling negotiations are locked on a classic problem that has vexed, divided, and disrupted Washington before. Republicans want to roll back federal spending, while President Biden and other Democrats do not. Time is short to strike a deal before a deadline as soon as June 1st, when the Treasury says the government runs the risk of running out of cash to pay its bills. Negotiators are expected to convene Wednesday for another round of talks. The political standoff is edging the country closer to a crisis. Again, the both sidesism just oozes out of this, that the real story here continues to be that a major American political party is holding the national economy hostage, is holding hostage the millions of people who would lose their jobs by plunging this country into a recession, by demanding cuts in things that Americans, by and large, don't want to be cut, and by refusing to give even a penny on the things that could be cut. We'll continue to follow it. In the meantime, we will be watching as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis launches his bid for the presidency, and does so on Twitter, and not like a live video feed on Twitter, but an audio feed on Twitter, Twitter Spaces, which is their audio channel. And he'll be talking to Elon Musk, who has just driven Twitter into the ground. It is just a shell of its former self. And so it's an interesting choice by Ron DeSantis anyway. But in an era where everybody is talking about, we need to ban TikTok, well, we really need to be looking at these other platforms that have closer American ties, where Nazis and people who are impersonating other people are running rampant on Twitter. And in the case of Facebook, you have the European Union, which has just slapped Facebook's parent company, Twitter, with a $1.3 billion fine for invading people's privacy, and has ordered Meta to stop transferring users' personal information across the Atlantic. The penalty is, like I said, it's a near record one, and Meta is warning that it could lead to service in Europe being cut off. But you have the European Union saying the privacy of individuals is more important than the profitability of a company. That's what we need to be focused on, rather than banning TikTok as part of a tough on China approach that they're undermining with these debt ceiling negotiations. Todd Alba joins us next to preview the Todd Alba Show, coming up next on many of these civic media radio stations. We'll be back here up north. Mr. Zommers, what's our walk-up music for Todd Alba this week?
Afternoon Tea by the Kinks. I don't know. What a weird choice. Why would I do that?
I see what you did there. All right. Here's Todd Alba, who's decided he's too good for morning radio and is leaving me to camp out in the afternoons now, sometime in the next 2 weeks or so here on the many of these fine civic media radio stations. Mr. Alba, good morning.
That's my Bob Dylan.
I figured.
That was your Bob Dylan?
It was,
hey, I could
tell. It was Dana Carvey. Dana Carvey used to do a great Bob Dylan. They come on an interview with Dana Carvey as Bob Dylan. He'd be like, really happy to be here. Yeah. I used to get a big kick out of it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
As the Jeffersons used to say, I'm moving on up. So to a different time slot, at least. They said they're sick of me in the morning, so I'm going to go try to annoy people in the afternoon, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So this is all, I gather, a work in progress. We've known for some time that we were going to, on June 5th, which is just under 2 weeks away now, that we were going to be switching some things around with shows and times. And of course, Aaron finally gets out of the janitorial closet there and makes the move to the new world headquarters of Civic
Media. I
came out
of the closet about 38 years ago. So.
Yeah. So, and again, this is all very exciting. This is, a new stage for Civic Media after, months of growing pains. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's just that we're all having fun trying to figure out, we're trying to remember where we've been juggling balls so many times. It's like, wait a minute, where did that ball end up again? And Todd is apparently going to be landing in, is it 1-3?
1-3. Look, did you put that on there to Zommers on the
that was not me.
All right, too good for morning radio. That's ridiculous. Come on.
Are you literally
now
just catching that now right now?
Yeah, I saw while you were talking. I didn't want to interrupt you. But yeah, well, I think, I don't know. I mean, I think what they're trying to do, Pat, is a couple of things. A, we're trying to move to have our product. It is Civic Media. We have a Civic Media radio network, but the company is Civic Media. So I think they want to take all of our programs. You've been doing Up North News for a long time, but really trying to focus on the podcasting and have multiple ways for people to listen to the programming. So by taking my show and As Goes Wisconsin and cutting it from 3 hours to two, that, as I understand it, makes it much more palatable for the podcast listener. That's number one. And then just trying to have some consistency across the network. And this is a startup company yet. They're trying to just juggle things around. So it's a team effort.
Well, and add more of a news component now that Terry Bell is, settled in as Civic Media News Director. It will include turning the Noon Hour more over into news and news talk for that period. We're going to be hearing more about that. And all of the shows running 2 hours, I think, is the right way to go. And again, my way of thinking has changed on that as well, because we were all raised in an age where every show was either 3 or 4 hours. You were either, you were like 6 to 9 or 6 to 10 and 10 to 2 and 2 to 6. And, filling 4 hours is, it's not easy without, unless you're willing to be very redundant. And so if you have the stable of talent that Civic Media has been able to put together with, you and Kristen and Dom and Crute and everybody else to, get a bunch of 2 hour shows in there, I think that's good for the listeners as well.
Well, you're kind of the igniter. You're Paul Molitor of civic media. You start us off at, from 6 until 8, and you get on base, and then we just try to get you across the plate.
Igniter, I'm more like the pilot light that occasionally goes out.
Come on now.
And, you know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and your feet are cold because you just haven't ignited things yet. But we try to get there by about 7:55 or so. As you know, we're awake. The coffee is settled in, and we're ready to roll. So, yeah, I guess the thinking is if Kreitlow can do something for 2 hours, you know, so can anybody.
No, we're looking forward to it. I mean, I'm going to miss 8 o'clock because I enjoy following you, quite frankly, because you tee a lot of issues up great, and sometimes we build on that. Sometimes we go in a different direction. But I like the morning. I like kind of like introducing people to the news as they're going to school or going to work or whatever. But the afternoons are also cool because it gives you – the program will stay a lot the same, but I think we're going to focus on more interviews and occasional bits here and there. So the program will change a little bit for afternoon, but not dramatically.
Well, I don't know why you think you're getting rid of me, because you're getting up early and showing up here from time to time, or I'm just invading your place at 1:06 in the some afternoon.
We'll do that. I've already said that Luke Mathers is still going to join us on Tuesdays, just at a different time. So, yeah, absolutely.
The cross pollination is of such that we should all be in those bee costumes from Saturday Night Live back in the day, John Belushi with the,
yes,
the little antenna.
Yes.
A lot of cross-pollination that's going on in this place. Back to your show specifically. Yeah. What have you been talking about or plan to talk about?
Well, today we've got you coming up the first 10 minutes on our show, and then we've got Trygve Olsen from the Lincoln Project joining us as well. I heard you talking about this morning. I appreciate it. I'm not surprised by anything anymore, but it was just appalling what happened in the Joint Finance Committee yesterday down here in Madison when our state senator from our neck of the woods in southwest Wisconsin, Howard Markline, who is the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, literally cut off the microphone of one of the members, Evan Goyke, one of the Democrats, the state representative on the committee. You laid it out earlier in the show very well. What I think, even bigger than the actual issue they were talking about, Pat, is this has become just commonplace now. Republicans don't even want to allow debate. I remember 1776, the musical, the opening number, John Adams, you know, they don't even want to give me the courtesy of open debate. And that's where we're at now, where Republicans don't, I mean, this is truly crossing into authoritarian type of territory here, where Republicans don't even want to debate the issues.
Well, and unfortunately, there's a reason for it. And the reason is that they don't get punished for it by the voters. They have muddied the waters enough now that they have made people so jaded that they assume that that's just standard procedure, that happened all the time, you know, when Democrats were running the show. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that did not happen. Mm-hmm. There was still decorum. There was still respectful debate. The minority members' bills were still brought up for public hearings and consideration. But Republicans have learned that they can be, I'm sorry, jerks about it. And the voters no longer say, you know, you're not my kind of person. You're not running the show the way that I would like to. And so they figure if they can get away with it, they're going to do it.
I honestly don't
see that changing anytime soon, unfortunately.
I honestly believe, Pat, that part of this started, at least in the modern era, back when my former boss, Dale Schultz, was the Republican majority leader in the Senate in 05 and 06. And Judy Robson was the minority leader. Dale never cut off debate. He allowed them to have as much time as they wanted to have issues. There was never any midnight voting. He always insisted things be happening in the light of day. And even people like Bob Jalk and Tim Cullen and others said, you know what? Dale's treating us fairly. Well, guess what happened? Republicans lost 4 seats, including you beating us up in Dave Zine's territory. Mm-hmm. And Dale lost the majority leadership and majority. And that's when Fitzgerald came in, and I thought they said, see what happens when you give Democrats a play equally, you lose seats. And ever since then, it's been back to business as normal for Republicans.
Yeah, letting somebody actually be respectful in their floor debate didn't cost them any votes. It was the votes they took did that.
I'm just saying that's the narrative the Republican caucus is using. You know.
There you go. Todd Alba as Bob Dylan. Thanks so much. Have a great show. Enjoy your Wednesday.
See you soon, Pat. Tomorrow.